Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, we might as well start off this show with a recap of Monday Night Football. The 5-1 Minnesota Vikings travel to the 1-6 Chicago Bears. And just when you think you've got this league figured out, suddenly, the Packers are only one game back in the NFC North.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it yesterday, too, how close the entire NFC is right now and how wide open things are. This really spoke to that. It also spoke to the old adage of, I mean, really any given Monday night in this particular case. Everything's going against the Chicago Bears. Questions at quarterback, questions about the head coach. What's going to happen here? Do the Bears have to consider going different directions? You step on the field, none of it matters. Jordan Howard, 153 rushing yards. Jay Cutler, 100 passer rating. And at the end of the day, they get a much-needed victory. And from the Vikings' point of view, I thought what was the most interesting thing is Mike Zimmer goes to the podium afterwards and says, we got a lot of stuff to fix. It just, again, reminds everybody.
Yeah.
There is very few perfect teams in this league. There's very few, you know, perfect formulas for how to handle success. And certainly everybody has something they're looking to improve upon.
Yeah, again, an example of it's a week-to-week league, and the Minnesota Vikings, their biggest problem, certainly their defense let them down, letting a running back go for 150 yards. But again, their offensive line proving to be a weakness. They gave up five more sacks. That's 11 sacks in two games in these back-to-back losses for Minnesota. They've got some things to try to shore up front, and that's a tough thing to fix. And now you look at where things are headed this weekend. The Detroit Lions go to Minnesota. Lions are 4-4. Minnesota's 5-2. The Packers are 4-3, hosting Indianapolis. If the Lions go into Minneapolis and win, which is a big if because the Lions have not been a good road team this year, but if the Lions go into Minneapolis and win and the Packers beat the Colts, suddenly you'll have the Packers and the Vikings at 5-3 and the Lions at 5-4, and it's anybody's ball game at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And you bring up an excellent point, too. You are right in the Lions haven't played particularly well on the road, but I think if anything else we've learned from them this season is that, I mean, they could play with anybody.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter what the records are.
Absolutely.
In terms of, now, sometimes that works out being an 8-8 team because you can lose anybody and win to anybody.
Yeah.
But the Lions have the potential. From the Packers' point of view, I don't know what the plan's going to be and if Mike McCarthy's even going to talk with his team about this or not, but it is another reminder of just how important it is to flush what's happened.
Yeah.
You look back to the Dallas game and how they had to really reset themselves going into that Bears game. This Atlanta game, losing in the way that they did, that could be demoralizing when you really put together a strong offensive effort and you just can't get it done. But that doesn't matter anymore.
Yep.
The Indianapolis Colts are what matter, and if you've been following the Colts at all this season, they're facing many of those questions too. But this is just another point that, I mean, no matter how much you think a team might have things figured out, it could change just like that.
Yeah, for sure. And you touched on it too, and as we talked yesterday, you look at the entire picture of the NFC. The conference now is down to only one team with one loss, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. Everybody else in the NFC has two or more losses. So it's wide open here. They're, you know, you can't even necessarily rule out some of these teams that are a couple games below 500. You know, the New Orleans Saints just got a huge win over the Seattle Seahawks over the weekend. If Drew Brees and that offense starts getting hot, even though they're below 500, and now who the heck knows? The Carolina Panthers got a big win. They're 2-5.
Yeah.
We all know what they're capable of and the type of winning streak that they were on last year. Even with five losses right now, you can't rule them out of the playoff picture either. This as we are nearing the halfway point here, it's setting up to be a crazy second half in the NFC.
Definitely. And with the Green Bay Packers, I mean, you do have to smile when you see the Bears beat the Vikings, because at this point in time, it's going to take a lot for the Bears to be able to be a contender again this season. In a lot of ways, it's like a free loss for the Vikings in terms of it doesn't really help anybody else. And as you said, if there's any team that's more excited about how this is playing out, it's not Green Bay. It's Carolina. It's Arizona. It's these teams that people saw as the front runners in this conference that have kind of fallen behind at the beginning.
Right.
The door is left open. Now, the key for Green Bay is you are already in a position of strength. Now that you go on the road here over the next month, you're going up against a team, you know, that in Philadelphia that now has questions. Tennessee, who there's you know, real questions about if they've beaten anybody yet. Washington has been up and down. So everybody has warts.
Yeah.
It's about being able to really take what you do, harness it, and see if you can get on a run.
Yeah, it almost comes back to even just the way the Packers are trying to figure things out on offense on a week-to-week basis based on who's available, who do you have to be able to get the ball to, and really this is becoming a week-to-week season because, as you said, every team looking ahead on the Packers' schedule, the Packers are capable of beating them, but those teams are also capable of rising up and beating the Packers. There's been so much back and forth so far this season that I think we're in for a pretty crazy ride here as we go along.
Definitely. That's why you have to form the identity of your offense. That's why the defense has to continue to improve and learn from these past few weeks, because that's probably going to be what the ultimate factor is, not just with Green Bay, but the entire NFC in general, is who prevails now in the second half of the season.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that, we'll throw it to a break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, on Monday, we heard from head coach Mike McCarthy following the one-point loss in Atlanta. Head coach had a lot of interesting things to say. Let's start with the fact that, in essence, he saw this performance coming from Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. He said he thought Thursday's practice last week, which is the most high-intensity, full-pads practice that the Packers have during the week, he thought it was Aaron Rodgers' best practice of the whole season, and he told Rodgers that on Friday morning when they reconvened. And kind of just goes to show that, you know, we don't get to see those practices, obviously, now. We only get to see the full practice when it's training camp, not during the regular season. But Mike McCarthy always has his finger on the pulse of this team, and he knew the defense was going to have a big challenge, but he really smelled a big performance from his offense.
I think that's why he kind of had that swagger last week when he was talking about this matchup. Yeah, a lot of things are working against them. They knew they weren't going to have Demaryius Randle. They probably weren't going to have Quentin Rollins. They were going to need a really strong offensive effort to win that game, and they played well enough to do it. Aaron Rodgers, as you said, that was something he talked about with him last week, what he had seen in practice. And how many times have we heard Rodgers say that in the past? I mean, that's what it ultimately comes down to. However successful you are on a game day, there's a direct correlation to your practice and week of preparation. It's very difficult to be able to succeed without having that, without Yep. being that efficient. It was one of the biggest issues he faced when he was dealing with a calf injury in 2013. So right now, how they're positioned, I think this is a really good sign for them, because you look at Rodgers, it's him and Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams. The rest of the nucleus was Jeff Janis, Trevor Davis, Geronimo Allison, yep. who a week earlier wasn't even on the active roster. They made a lot out of really being able to put things together quickly with the injuries they were dealing with. And I just don't see how, when you're going forward now, that has to be something that's going to benefit you in the long run.
Yeah, and I think we heard that from McCarthy on Monday. He said, hey, make no mistake, this team has a lot of work to
right.
do. We've got things to improve upon. Nobody is saying everything is all sunshine and roses here after a one-point loss. But he came right out and said, this is a fun team to coach. He said, these guys have a great work ethic, their energy, their enthusiasm, it's always there. And, you know, the head coach feeds off that. The veteran players feed off of that when you know, the young guys have this energy. The young guys follow the lead of the veteran guys when a guy like Julius Peppers says, hey, yeah, that was a tough loss, but let's forget about it and move on. We got something good right. going here. Even though the Packers are 4-3, I think they feel like, you know, they're a team on the rise here in this muddled NFC, and it's time for them to seize it starting this week.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at how the Packers exactly played out this game. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, 6 carries for 60 yards. Aaron Ripkowski said he wasn't really planning to touch the ball at all. He ends up with 6 carries for 34 yards. Devontae Adams is lining up in the backfield. I mean, that's about as shorthanded as you can get.
Yeah.
Without, you know, literally being able to play Mike Daniels at running back. I mean, that's kind of where that's the next step. But they were successful. They succeeded. They were efficient. I know the last 31 seconds are things that they're going to want to work on, and they would have liked to have come back and won that game. But outside of really having to adjust at the start of the third quarter to what Atlanta was doing, I thought the Packers were able to stay out in front the entire time. And now, as you said, there's certain things. McCarthy said it. They don't want Rodgers to be running as much as he has. They need to establish a running game. But it's fun. And there's elements there that are showing you that the team and this offense particularly is working out of those early doldrums. So I think there's a lot of things to be encouraged about that performance in general.
Yeah, this issue of Rodgers with the six scrambles for 60 yards in Atlanta, I think this really is going to be an issue to watch going forward. As Mike McCarthy said, they don't want to make a living with Aaron Rodgers running the football. But in the first half, we saw how Rodgers just picked apart Atlanta's zone defense.
Yeah.
And the receivers, not even the top of the depth chart receivers on this team, were making plays against that zone. Atlanta goes to man defense more in the second half. Well, in man defense, the defensive backs' backs are to the quarterback, which then, you know, if nobody's open, you take off and run, and you're three or four steps down the field before they turn around and start to come after you. In zone defense, they've got their eyes on the quarterback. You're not going to be able to scramble as much, but that's a type of defense that Rodgers picks apart with his accuracy. So this 60-yard rushing performance by Aaron Rodgers really is something that defenses are going to have to figure out how to handle this.
Yeah, no question, Mike. And that's the biggest thing, too, I think, is that, yeah, McCarthy's right. Aaron Rodgers, you win with your arm. That's how you do this thing. But if they're going to give you those yards, you have to take it.
you have to
make the defense pay for that. It was an interesting chess match to watch in terms of how it unfolded and how Atlanta defended them, whether it was using the spy kind of against Rodgers at times. The delayed blitz obviously worked out well for them with Vic Beasley on that one sack. But in general, when they didn't have him accounted for, Rodgers was able to make them pay. And that's really the greatest thing about Rodgers in terms of what he can do on the field. He's so multifaceted. We talked about, you know, the Vikings and too many sacks for Sam Bradford. Well, Sam Bradford needs to stay in the pocket. Aaron Rodgers can adapt in so many different ways, and I thought that was one of the reasons why they were really able to roll with the punches the way they did against the Falcons.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll switch gears after the break and talk a little bit more about the Packers defense. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, let's talk a little bit more about the Packers defense. They were shorthanded, clearly, and that definitely played into Dom Capers' game plan here with regards to wanting to double cover Julio Jones, not leave those young cornerbacks too vulnerable too often in terms of single coverage, which means you're counting on your four-man rush to get home and to try to disrupt the quarterback. And other than the two back-to-back sacks there, I believe it was late in the early fourth quarter, the Packers' pass rush just wasn't able to get Matt Ryan out of rhythm. We heard both Mike McCarthy and Dom Capers use that phrase. We didn't get him out of rhythm, and Ryan was certainly in rhythm on that final drive.
He was. Dom was asked about this on Monday in terms of, and we saw it in the Insider Inbox this week too, people asking why they didn't blitz more. And Capers had a genuinely funny belly laugh when the topic was broached, because Dom Capers, who helped develop the zone blitz system, I don't think has ever been accused of not blitzing enough.
Yeah,
and
right.
He had a really good, I felt, a really good reason for it. I mean, as you said, Mike, the safety in the secondaries, that's where you guys were going to be stressed. You wanted to give them help, and that means you can't be deploying extra pass rushers.
Yep.
You have to get home with what is perceived to be your strength in the four-man blitz, or four-man rush, I should say. Now, they did do some things differently at times. We saw Dayton Jones move in there as a three-technique interior rusher trying to generate more push inside next to
And we saw a seven defensive back deployment on a third down at one point in the second half as well. Dom Capers was trying lots of different things.
Yeah, I think that's the dime plus, right? At least that's what they used to call
like
it. But that's what you have to do, and I felt like that was the right game plan. We talked about it last week during the build-up, but unfortunately, as we also talked about, Atlanta's offensive line is vastly improved over the last 2 years, and it's difficult to get home with four guys against that rush. And even the times in which they did get close to Ryan, he has that quick release that he can get the ball out just in time to avoid the sack. But certainly not enough knockdowns, not enough incompletions, only seven incompletions thrown on the day for Ryan. And it just boiled down to him being able to get into a rhythm, despite the fact that they really only had one explosive play during the four quarters.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the thing that we saw in terms of Dom Capers' comments on Monday, the thing that he regretted the most was the the opportunity, I would even call it two opportunities for interceptions or turnovers on that final drive by the Falcons. You saw the one where Ladarius Gunter jumped the out route to Mohamed Sanu and just wasn't quite able to snag it. Would have been a pick six going the other way and sealed the game for the Packers if it happens. And then later in the drive, Julio Jones, who had not really been much of a factor in the second half, goes down the seam, down the hash marks, and doesn't quite corral the pass against double coverage. Gunter had his hands in there, and the ball kind of pops up, and Clinton Dix maybe had a chance to get his hands on it. Everything happens really fast. The Packers aren't able to come up with that. And I liken those, you know, not getting those opportunities, not turning those into the turnovers the Packers needed against a quarterback like Matt Ryan. I liken that to, you know, facing that really, really tough pitcher in a baseball game where you might only get one pitch in an at-bat that's going to be good enough to hit, and you can't miss it. Right. And when Matt Ryan makes a mistake like he did on the out route to Sanu, you can't miss that. That's your one chance for an interception maybe the entire game. You have to make it happen, and the Packers just didn't quite do it.
No, and that was one of the things that, you know, even Micah Hyde was kind of lamenting a little bit in the locker room on Monday, is the fact that not necessarily that they missed the opportunity, but just because everything was perfect. It was the perfect call from Capers. Specifically, I'm talking about the Gunter play.
Yep.
That was an instance in which they did send a guy. They put the extra pressure on Ryan. They made his feet hot. He throws that ball out, and that's an opportunity. As he said, if Sanu doesn't get his hand in there to kind of mix up the play a little bit, Gunter's probably gone for six.
Oh, yeah.
He catches that.
Yeah,
which
that's
would have
a
been.
Pick six for
so
sure.
That's a critical play in the portion of the game. But as we talked about in the past, too, when there's instances in which you are giving up production, when points are being scored, that's the ultimate X factor, is the interception, is making the big play. The Packers just couldn't find it against the Falcons.
Yeah, and Dom Capers continues to, you know, kind of be in that mode. He needs to see this defense generate more turnovers. They need to start taking the ball away, especially when you're playing shorthanded. And
you're stopping the run the way you are, too. I mean, there was one big play that leaked out,
right.
But I mean, those are the two elements, not to interrupt your point, but it's the run defense and it's turnovers. That's the zone blitz scheme.
Yeah,
and they're getting one of them right now. It's just the other one they're kind of waiting on.
Yeah, the turnovers need to start coming, and then this defense, I think, maybe rises to another level. So with that, we'll throw it to a break. But before that, let's take care of some sponsor business here. Picture this, Wes. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12 by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, final segment here today. Let's talk about this punt return the Packers had. Trevor Davis busts one for 55 yards against the Atlanta Falcons, sets up a touchdown in the first half for Green Bay. And the Packers' longest punt return since the end of the regular season in 2014. Punt return, kind of a sore spot for Green Bay in 2015. The longest punt return the entire season was just 16 yards. A pretty good sign to see the Packers bust one out here.
Yeah, I didn't want to structure in terms of the Packers really needed that, but I think the Packers really needed that. And this is something in terms, and I'm not trying to be alarming about it. I just think as far as like, okay, there it is. We can do this.
Right.
You know, it's something that we can now look to venture out and duplicate now going forward. Trevor Davis is a really exciting athlete when he gets in the open field. Really, we've always known he's fast. That's been, you know, that was the first thing we all wrote about when the Packers drafted him in the fifth round out of Cal earlier this year. But I'm really impressed by his explosiveness. I mean, he really, when you can give him a chance and wash away some of those gunners, he has a real big opportunity to make a play happen, and I thought that's exactly what you saw there. The changing of the field position in such a drastic fashion. How many times this year, Mike, have you and I talked about inside the 20, Packers having to go the full length of the field? Well, in that case, they got inside the other 20.
Yeah.
Just a really critical play at a critical time. Jeff Janis talked about it, too, in the locker room, saying the offense, it isn't that they needed that, but it definitely was something that helped them, considering all the things that were working against them in terms of injuries.
Yeah, and it was interesting schematically the way the Packers pulled that off when I looked at it on film, and fans can check it out on Packers.com, my What You Might Have Missed feature. I've got a little video clip. The Falcons, schematically, they took their gunner on the one side and actually sent him through the middle of the field to try to beat the coverage down and get in front of Trevor Davis. Well, Ladarius Gunter completely wiped that guy out as he cut across the middle of the field. And then a guy on the wing on that side then shifted out and sort of became the gunner. It was a fullback who was going down that sideline. And Joe Thomas just kept blocking and just kept pushing him out to the side. He basically got him all the way to the boundary.
Yeah.
So then by the time Davis caught it and was able to make those first two guys miss just with a burst of speed, the lane was wide open there. And he took advantage of it. And that's something that you know, opposing punt teams now are going to have to pay attention to with this Packer punt return.
Definitely. If there's one thing we've learned, too, I mean, Joe Thomas has done a really nice job as a rotational linebacker in this defense, but he's been a really good special team player for over two years now.
Absolutely.
And I was really impressed by, if you're going to do that, I love the matchup of having Thomas matched against a tight end or a fullback. The cornerbacks and receivers, that's where it gives you a problem. That's where you need the matchup. But that went in the Packers' favor, and Trevor Davis did the rest. It was a beautiful play, and it's something I'm sure Ron Zook is going to be putting on film here in weeks to come.
Yeah, for sure. To see him kind of break those last couple tackles, get another 15 yards down the sideline, really set the Packers up well. So with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.